Right now, we go to Beirut for a few minutes with Charles Glass, a veteran international reporter. Many of us remember him on ABC News, and he's at the heart of one of the most dangerous places in the world, and it's good to hear you, Charles Glass.
Thank you.
And Charles is speaking to us in a place right now where it's about 5:30 in the afternoon, and I mentioned the turbulence in the Middle East, and as we know, Beirut has always been one of the prime spots for action. Right now, there's a lot of action in the Middle East, and most notably in Syria. Your thoughts about the intervention by the United States in Syria?
Well, I was just in Syria about a week ago. I left just before the chemical attack that led to the American retaliation against the Syrians. It seemed to have a slightly dramatic political impact at the time, military impact nil, because the air base that was bombed is still functioning. And the Syrian war seems to have resumed its normal course, with the U.S. and its allies in the region supporting one side and the Russians and the Iranians supporting the government.
And in Iran, the President of the United States has stated more than once, more than twice, that he's not happy with the agreement that the previous president ironed out. But if things calm there, or is that still potentially a volatile situation?
Well, the agreement wasn't a bilateral treaty between the U.S. and Iran. It was a multilateral treaty that included the Russians, the Chinese, the British, the French, and other countries. And so if it's going to be broken, it has to be broken by them all. I think if the United States drops out, the Iranians would have less incentive to honor the treaty and might then want to pursue a nuclear weapon. At the moment, under the terms of the treaty, they're not allowed to. And as far as one knows from the inspectors who go to Iran, they're not pursuing it.
Now, Charles, when we had Iran go awry in 1979, it actually was an economic boon for some places in the United States, most notably the oil patch, and we're solidly in it here. Have things changed to the point where there won't be any economic ups or downs if something really wild and crazy happens in Iran or in somewhere else in the Middle East?
Well, I mean, oil production levels, as you know, are high relative to demand these days, which is why oil prices are low. Iranian oil is sold on the market worldwide, except to the U.S. So I don't think if the U.S. started importing Iranian oil, that would open up avenues for American business to sell in Iran. I know after the treaty was signed on the nuclear agreement, that many American business delegations started showing up in Tehran in the belief that eventually sanctions would be dropped and they could start selling, for example, Boeing airliners to the Iranians who haven't been able to buy even spare parts for their civilian airliners.
Charles on I-10, it's Mike on I-10. Mike on I-10, you're calling for Charles Glass, and it's nice to hear Mike on I-10. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning. You know, Iran reminds me of China, and that the better relations we have with Iran, and then a lot of people probably in this area of the country aren't going to appreciate this, but the better relationships we have with Iran, the more stable the Mideast will become. And I know that's going to bother the Saudis a little bit, but let's be honest. You know, the royal family in Saudi Arabia controls the royal family a little bit. But, I mean, as far as an open and kind of free society, Iran is much more advanced than Saudi Arabia.
All right. Your thoughts, Charles Glass?
Well, what you say is correct. Women are not permitted to drive cars, for example, in Saudi Arabia, whereas in Iran they can drive cars. They serve in parliament. Some of them have been ministers in the government. The only thing that they're required to do is to wear their headscarf, which they these days pull back further and further to try and test the limits of police control in Iran. However, I mean, it is not a free and open society, nor is Saudi Arabia. I mean, neither, I would say, is a great model for democracy. However, these two powers are competing for dominance in the region. The Saudis using Sunni Muslim fundamentalists and the Iranians using Shiite forces like Hezbollah in Lebanon and the popular militias in Iraq, which is probably detrimental to the whole region, giving people the only the choice between a Shiite theocracy and a Sunni theocracy, in the U.S. picking the Sunni side in Syria and generally in the region, at a time when probably what should be sought is a balance and a lessening of tension and a reduction in the shipment of arms to volatile areas, which in Syria have killed up to 500,000 people.
Lastly, Charles, what about what's happening right now in North Korea? You're removed from that situation, being in Beirut, but the world is watching. What's going on there?
Well, I wish I'd never been to North Korea. I've never been to South Korea, and I hesitate to comment on it. I do suspect that the bombing in Syria was in part a message to the North Koreans that there are red lines which could bring punitive action by the U.S., But I'm not sufficiently I'm not qualified at all to know what's going on in North Korea, and I'm very happy to talk about the Middle East, which
well,
I do know.
I understand that.
But about something I don't know.
This saber rattling, though, that is ongoing, is cause for concern. And is it news in the Middle East? It is here, obviously. It's the number one international story right now. But is it the same there, or is this something that is being largely ignored where you are?
Anything that threatens a world war is news everywhere in the world. And so the American posture vis-a-vis North Korea is a great concern here. And as is America's posture in Syria. So people are watching it very closely and hoping that it doesn't get out of hand.
As far as where you are in Beirut, as I mentioned, it's been a hot spot. As we know, many tragedies on the soil that you now occupy. How is it now?
Well, the war ended here after 15 years in 1990, and since then the country has slowly rebuilt. There was an Israeli invasion in 2006 when Hezbollah captured some Israeli soldiers, and the Israelis came in and blasted the place and bombed Beirut and bombed almost every bridge in the country. But they've been rebuilding since then, and the country is peaceful. There were a lot of fears that the Syria war would spread to Lebanon. There are at least 1.5 million Syrian refugees in Lebanon at the moment. Lebanon is only a country of 4 million people, so they've absorbed a lot. But however, I think there's no constituency in Lebanon for a resumption of any kind of war. After 15 years and the loss of 150,000 people, people really don't want to fight again. And so while there have been very occasional car bombings by Sunni fundamentalist groups to try and get something started here, they failed. And the Lebanese security services have been pretty effective in arresting people they think are going to bomb somewhere.
Well, we thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure, and it's certainly interesting to speak to a man who right now is voicing his words from Beirut. Thank you, Charles Glass.
Thank you very much.